but we're all still working on it, right? By no means are we at where we want to be at. We work on it every day to try to be better feel, better timing, and a better advocate for the horse, and just try to do a better job.
Welcome to the Equine Body Talks podcast. We'll be diving into the equine industry from the lens of a body worker, talking to other equine professionals and discussing scenarios around soft tissue work for all equine athletes. I'm Kim Krebs, your host. I've been working for over 2 decades in this industry as a loper, barn manager, and body worker. With the many horses I've worked with in all of these capacities, it has driven me to want to continually find out the why and the hows of equine biomechanics, health, and performance. My mentor and one of our industry's leaders, Tina Watkins of In-Hand Equine Therapy, will also be sharing hosting duties with me. Tina has been an equestrian her entire life and has dedicated the last 25 years to bringing bodywork forward as a professional career through her business, as well as education and teaching of future and current bodyworkers. This podcast is dedicated to opening the conversation around equine wellness, diving deeper into the whole body approach for equine performance horses. For me, the working cowhorse discipline is at the top of the Western performance horse events. I appreciate the all-around horse that comes from these training programs and the years and years it takes to fully develop them into top athletes. I can also say, it has me on the edge of my seat to watch a good fence run. It's an intricate sport with precision work in the reining maneuvers, innate ability as the horses work cattle, and sheer adrenaline as they fly down the fence. I wish I had the nerve to give it a try, but for now, watching these horses from the comfort of the stands is enough to get the blood pumping. In today's episode, we look at the sport of working cowhorse, or is sometimes referred to as rein cowhorse. It's a discipline that involves 3 unique elements of reining, cutting, and fence work. It has a rich history that goes back to the time of the Spanish vaqueros, when cattle were worked on large tracts of land, specifically in the California region, and were oftentimes half wild. A well-trained, quick-footed horse was required to handle these cattle for ranch work. The Spanish vaquero style of training has roots in classical dressage, with maneuvers first utilized for wartime efforts. A finished or made cowhorse took years to develop, and very deliberate methods of bits, bezels, and ultimately bridles were utilized during the training process. They were back in those days, and they still are today, sought after as some of the most trained and elite athletes of the equine world. Today, the National Rein Cowhorse Association oversees many individual associations across North America and around the world that hold competitions. As you will hear in our interview, horses are first shown at 3 years of age and continue up the ladder to the bridle horses. Our guests today are Tyler and Kaylee Albrecht of Albrecht Performance Horses, based just west of Trochu, Alberta. Tyler has been in the saddle his entire life and has mentored under Doug Reinhardt of Reinhardt Quarter Horses, as well as having many accolades to his name in the reining industry prior to starting out as a cowhorse trainer. Kaylee herself has been involved as a loper and barn manager in the cutting horse industry and has now gone on to achieve her teaching degree and master's in education. I've had the privilege of knowing them both while I too worked for Doug Reinhardt and consider them great friends, super clients, and all around phenomenal horse people.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. This is just really exciting for me personally because I've known you guys for so long. Tyler and I used to work together and have many a story that won't be shared on this episode, just FYI. But we're going to get into the topic, of course, of the working cowhorse, which is Tyler's expertise.
Thanks for having us. Really appreciate the opportunity.
It's exciting for me more so because this is a sport that I am actually absolutely terrified to do myself, but I love watching it. So I have a lot of envy that you guys are able to do this because Kaylee, you as well are a non-pro, but there's no way I could put a run together for sure because I don't do speed.
I think you could do it. I'm really good.
Let's maybe just jump right into it. And can you guys just describe to us a little bit? Because of course we have listeners all around the world that this will probably be the very first time they've ever heard of working cow horse. What does a working cow horse run, or what does the discipline itself entail?
Basically, it's a three event horse. Number one, we have a herd work, which is a lot like the cutting, except we are able to help the aged event horses. We show in two hands and a snaffle or a hackmore. And then the herd work for the bridal spec horses, we are one hand closer to a cutter, but we're still able to help. But we still cut 2 to 3 cows out of a herd. And we try to make it look, or at least I try to make it look as close to a cutting horse as I can. And then we move to the rein work, which is very similar to the reining horses. So circles, lead changes, run and slide, turn around. Again, it's not exactly the same. They look a little different than the straight reiners, but we try to get it pretty close. And then we move to the fence work, which is sometimes the most intimidating. It's the fastest. It's a little more offensive than the herd work, where we box a single cow and then we leave with it, try to get at least one turn each way on the fence, and then go circle each way. So it can be, yeah, like you said earlier, it can be fast, but it's very fun.
And it's so fun to watch those really good bridle horses when they put a run together. There's absolutely nothing else that compares.
I agree.
Done right, it's a really cool feeling. Done wrong, and it feels like a disaster. But it is fun.
And for those that have never seen it before, Tyler, could you tell us, does the horse do these three aspects right after each other? Or is it you go and do part of it and then you go back to the barn, kind of like eventing, where you then would go out again with that horse? How do you put those three together?
It depends. Generally, the aged event horses at the more major events will spread it out over 3 days. Sometimes there's even a day in between. So definitely that for the younger horses, it's spread out. Sometimes like the older horses at the weekend shows, they'll do a rein fence right back to back. The older horses at the weekend shows maybe won't have a herd work. So it comes in all different variations. Definitely the aged event horses, we do separated daily. Like the most rigorous event coming to mind would be like a World's Greatest Horseman, where they end up doing a finals day. And that's another event added in that to the steer stopping, but they'll do, I believe they do four in a day. And that's pretty hectic.
But those are on those older horses as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
For me, that is something I really want people to get the gist of for working cow horse here, is also the history. So I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about the history of working cow horse, because it's all about the development of the horse, which is a little backwards nowadays to what some of our industries have gone towards, which is really looking at putting money towards the younger horses. And not that the working cow horse industry doesn't have their futurities like you've talked about, which means three-year-olds for those that aren't aware, but the futurities are young horses, but you really do look at starting them there, but it's the development up into that bridle horse, which is the older show horses. So if you don't mind chatting a little bit about the history as well that's behind that and that whole aspect of developing.
Yeah, like the bridle horses are super sought after. First of all, they're hard to find because they've come up through the ranks. The history, like you said, there is a process. So that they start them in a snaffle, they eventually move them into the hackamore. And I believe the history on it is when they're changing teeth, so it's easier on them. They go through the hackamore stage, and then they go into the two rein stage, which is a bozalita underneath a bridle. It's just an easier step from two hands into a bridle. And then from the two rein go into the full bridle. And it takes us, you know, say we ride them as a two-year-old, and then they go through the three-year-old snaffle bit year, and then they go through two derby years where you can still show them in a snaffle or a hackamore, and then they have that next year as a two-rein year. And then so it takes us basically 4 years to get them into the bridle. And as the history behind it, I guess it's like Vaquero, West Coast, and it is meant to bring them along at a more reasonable pace than we need them to be perfect right now and win money for sure. That's the rough history behind it.
Your description too of the sought after bridal horse is because, you know, what people don't really always grasp is the amount of training, not just for bridal horses, but for any of the older show horses, the amount of training that has gone in to produce those animals is extremely extensive. And so not every horse is going to be able to achieve that either. It really is a lot of discipline, and not every horse is necessarily also built to get to that point either. The history, as you say, of the transition based on the development of the horse, whether it's because of the evolution of the teeth and when those teeth are starting to make significant change, they put them into the hackmore, or, you know, waiting until they can actually handle the bridle itself later on in life as well. But it's fascinating to me is that whole history behind it.
Yes, totally. And Tyler, would you say, to your knowledge, it's very similar for those that ride out there more dressage or in the English world, that it would be more like bringing a dressage horse up into the double bridle, which again is, you know, that more educated type of horse? Is that quite similar to then what you guys would feel when you're bringing it into being a bridle horse?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Like, and my knowledge of the dressage is pretty darn limited, so I don't want to make a big statement, but it sounds like it's a pretty similar thing. You know, I mean, there's the age of end horses can do some really cool stuff, but they're darn sure, I mean, we all know the horses at that age, even the good ones, they're not totally solid. But by the time they're in that advanced stage bridle horses, they should be pretty darn solid, where you could unload them off the trailer, jump on them, go show them, or jump them off the trailer and have a non-pro jump on and go show and have them stay together. They know their job. So again, with my knowledge of the dressage, which is limited, it sounds very similar.
Because I think sometimes people don't realize how much goes into each sport. You know, they think that, like Kim mentioned at the beginning of the intro, that, you know, they think that their sport does so much more. And I mean, I appreciate you guys so much with how much work that you put in. I think people really need to be able to equate it back and forth so they understand the years that have gone into making a horse at the top of your game.
100%. I think people do get lost, always sometimes thinking theirs is the best, but I believe any equine sport done at a high level is incredibly hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. Good point. When you were saying it's the development of a young horse through the stages, could you just talk us through a little bit what that means age-wise, like what the stages would be as you're bringing these horses through the different stages you're talking about?
Absolutely. So the two-year-old year is we're just kind of getting them started and seeing if they have the ability to go on, if they want to do this. Then if they do, the three-year-old year is the maturity year. Then the next year we call the 4 and 5-year-old years their derby years, and they can also be shown through the hackamore in the hackamore classes in those years. And then after their 5-year-old year, when they're 6, is generally their 2-rein year. Now that if that horse has a year off and ends up being 7, they have 1 2-rein year. They have a chance, that 1 year is their chance for the 2-rein year. So, but basically a 6-year-old is their 2-rein year. And then after that is in the full bridle. So.
And once they're in the bridle, they can't go back. So you can't take a bridle horse and then go and show him in a hackamore or a snaffle, with the exception of the very entry-level classes for entry-level people. Once they're in a bridle, they're in a bridle.
Right. And then they maintain that bridle horse, like Fletch, your horse, Kaylee, he is, you know, well into his teens, mid-teens, higher teens, and doing well, right? Like these are horses that are brought along to be there for a long time.
Absolutely. He's 17 this year, and he just feels like he's more and more solid.
Yeah. Into that point as well is the conditioning aspect of being able to bring these horses up in that sort of slower manner. You start to develop not only the strength, but the cardio as well, because the uniqueness about this sport is you need the strength for those reining and those cutting type maneuvers, which are, you know, the stops, the holds, the slides, the, you know, quick turns, but then you need the speed to go down the fence, because when you're chasing that cow, it is full out running.
Absolutely. It's completely offense. And yeah, you don't want to run out of air halfway through.
Yeah. So conditioning is a huge aspect for your guys' sport. And what are some of the things that you need to look at in terms of that? Do you do a lot of cross training with your conditioning program? How do you make sure that you get both the strength and the conditioning on par?
That's a hard one because, well, I have you out to tell me what to do, first of all, and to keep us on track. But number one thing I try to look for, and this is maybe a little off the conditioning topic, but I want a good loper when I'm looking at my prospects. So it's easy for them to carry themselves. So it's easier for me to get them conditioned, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like maybe a horse that's a huge stopper, but isn't a very good loper, we might have a little more trouble with this event. And then it's harder to get them to lope and hold a lope and condition a lope. But as far as conditioning, we just try to ride them a lot. I know Kaylee and I've discussed, and I know you and I've discussed this, is we've changed how we look at time off for horses now, whereas maybe we just don't kick a horse out through the winter, but we try to, you know, maybe we're not working them at a high level, but we're trying to keep them moving, and we're maybe not running and stomping and turning and working a cow per se, but we're still getting on them a couple days a week and maybe cruise them around and just keep everything working, keep them in shape. So when it does come time to show, we're not struggling to get them back in average shape.
I think one thing that's really advantageous about the cow horse is right from the get-go, they are started in a way that teaches them to use their body correctly. And when they know how to lift themselves and hold themselves on a day that, say, we're not going to work them, we're just going to go exercise them, we can still gather them up. We can still pick their belly up, pick their back up, and ask them to use themselves instead of just letting them kind of flop around everywhere and saying they got exercise that day. And I think that really helps just them knowing how to use themselves in the longevity piece, because the older show horses, they don't get worked every day, but they darn sure get rode every day, and all those muscles get used every day.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, that looking at your horse's posture and making sure that they're able to hold the posture you want during exertion is really important. Tyler, you mentioned something when you were speaking before about their wind. If for people that don't understand that terminology, can you just talk just a bit more about how you would build up the horse's wind or their cardio aspect of their conditioning program?
Again, it's not something maybe that I do consciously, but we do try to warm these horses up every day before we work them. I trot mine a lot, not just for conditioning, but because of training reasons. I want my horses to trot with a cow, maybe not lope. So we start out trotting so they know how to trot. We lope around lots, teaching to steer. Consciously, I'm not sure I do a bunch other than, like Kaylee just said, we lope them around, we make them use their body, and we try to give days off so they mentally and physically have a break, but I try to keep them on a pretty steady program where they're not sitting around for a whole week or, you know, and what we do, take horses out, we go and cruise them out in the field and just lope so they're still getting worked and building their cardio without working them. You know, the young horses will go to some brandings in the spring, just again, so they're out and doing something and it's different, but they're still being used.
I think that people don't realize, you know, your program has been developed over such a long time, and it's kind of innate to you that going out for a long trot is just part of the program. You know, people don't realize that you know, you're breaking it down into working on a cardio aspect of your program. And then you've already described to us how you're working on your strength aspect with your turns and your flexion work and that kind of thing. And so, you know, for a lot of trainers like yourself that have been in it for a long time and doing such a phenomenal job, we really want to point out to people that you guys are breaking these days up and the horse is being used in multiple different ways. And that not only strengthens it long-term through its joints and its body, but you've mentioned a couple times mental, which I think is a huge thing with show horses. And I know chatting with Kim, it sounds like you guys do a great job. And you mentioned that your one horse is 17 and happy to keep going. So tell us about the mental requirements for your sport.
They have to be able to take a joke in a way, because we're teaching them three things over a pretty short period of time when we look at the futurities. And the three things do, even though they're similar, they are all a little bit, like they mess each other up a little bit. So number one, what I'm looking for is they've got to be really, really willing them to have some cow, but still be able to let me handle them for the reining. But yeah, I'm looking for mentally something that doesn't mind me training on it. It's happy to come do its job, yet still be able to think on its own with a cow. It's one of those events that is funny, because we want them to think on their own for the herd work and the fence work, yet come to the rein and let us handle them and dictate everything. So again, I believe it takes a really special individual to be able to handle that. Lots of horses that are cowy that maybe don't necessarily want to be handled or want to travel. And there's lots of nice traveling big stoppers that maybe just can't put that cow stuff together without doing it for them. So again, we're really looking for a very special horse.
That's a great point. And do you think that some of that mental capacity is also brought in when you guys are going to different things? Like you mentioned in the spring, maybe you'll go to a couple brandings, and does that help then the horse be able to think a little bit more or think a bit differently?
I think so. I think it darn sure helps them grow up and teaches them a work ethic. And a lot of times maybe they might not think being a show horse is all that bad if maybe they go, you know, pull pairs all day or drag calves half a day. And even if they enjoy it, like it's, again, it just something refreshing, right? Something new to see, get some better broke, gives them a different outlook on things.
One thing that I think I've noticed from working with Tyler and working with other trainers, I think the really good trainers very purposefully think about their horse's mind. And I know we have conversations about it all the time. Well, you know, he moves his body real nice, but we're not sure if he's going to take the pressure. Well, this horse got his first set of sliders and ran down and stopped like it was nothing, didn't bother him at all. We talk about, do they get all sweaty and worked up when you're working them? Is it hard on them mentally? And we're just try to be really aware of that. And then I think a good trainer is going to work the horse with their mentality in mind.
And I think that's something that comes with the more you do it, right? And the older you get. And I mean, the young trainers, me being kind of middle-aged, but we've all been there where you're trying to make things happen instead of letting them happen. And that's just part of it, I think.
That is such a key point, because I know I've seen it not only in your guys' program, but in some other programs I've been involved in too, where you do get those younger horses have loads of talent and you know that it's still there, but like you said, it's not quite ready for that pressure. So, yeah. You know, you may end up skipping over that futurity year in terms of the showing, not the training or the having them go out to different events and having them haul around, but you won't put the pressure of the show on them yet because they're not there yet. And that's just a feel thing that, you know, you've been able to develop over years. And, you know, your horse experience goes back right from the beginning, right? Right when you were born, you've always been around them. So that's an innate ability of yours to be able to read those horses.
Yeah. I mean, and for the record, like we're still and you guys know this, but we're all still working on it, right? By no means are we at where we want to be at. We work on it every day to try to be better feel, better timing, a better advocate for the horse, and just try to do a better job. It's hard because, you know, I mean, you guys know with the pressures of life and making a living, and it's a tough industry. There's way more pressure to it than, you know, I even knew or thought about when I decided I wanted to do it.
That's a great point, because I think the people that are really trying to work on mastery and work towards, like you say, advocating for the horse and really making a change, or those people like yourself that know that they're trying to strive and trying to figure things out every day, and not just that, oh, this is what I'm going to do, and if the horse doesn't fit into this box, too bad for it. Like, I'm shoving in it in this box, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kim always tells me about you guys' team that you have at your farm, that you really encompass a lot of team members to make sure that all your horses are doing really well. Can you tell us a little bit about the team that you have developed?
Well, basically, it's my wife and I, and Kim is a vital part of our team. She lined us up with a really good farrier, Carson Richardson. He shows up when he says he's going to show up. He handles horses really well, and he just does a good job. And the other part of our team is Ty Corbeil, a Corvette. Again, Kim highly recommended him. Everyone works well together. And I think I could do a better job sitting back, you know, taking everybody's stuff and using it more in unison. But I do believe between Kim and Ty and Carson, like, they're all open-minded and they're all good at what they do. And also, like, my wife's an integral part of the team. Without her, I couldn't do any of this. Again, I believe, I just want to make this point and not get off topic, but for anyone out there that is going to train horses, this really is a team thing. You cannot even begin to get started without good people behind you. And I mean, Kim and I, we've both seen it when we worked for Doug. I mean, there was four of us there at least, moving steady, right? And Kim kept us all kind of pointed in the right direction. I'm sure she shook her head at us once in a while, maybe more than once in a while. But I mean, it was neat to see it when I was at that stage, and to see Doug have success, but to see all that went into it. Like, it wasn't just one man and a horse. It was a lot of people and a horse.
Yeah. I think that is so key. And the communication between us, like you've mentioned, working with Ty and working with Carson, you're on a case and you're talking about a specific horse. We're very easily able to communicate amongst ourselves. And if Carson says to me, hey, I had a really hard time getting this horse's hind leg lifted, that's not normal for him, next time you're out at Tyler's, maybe, you know, take a look at it. Or vice versa. If I'm working on a horse and I say to you, you know, there's just something that is consistent. I'm not really liking this SI. It's not making any changes for me. And this is the second time we've seen it. Let's talk to Ty and bring Ty in. Like, that open communication is essential. But the other point you brought up, Tyler, that I think is awesome is the fact that you have worked with multiple people prior to even launching yourself as a trainer on your own. And it's that whole idea of mentorship that, you know, you developed early on and learning the ropes, and not saying that people can't just jump in, but I think really having that whole idea about mentoring under other people first is key.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's invaluable. It's not just about learning how to train a horse. It's so many things. It's meeting people. It's developing contacts. It's being responsible. Almost, I mean, you could liken the relationships I've had with a couple of trainers almost as a father figure type thing, right? And I know those guys, like, especially Doug, I could call him today and say, what do you think of this? And he'll do his best to help me. It's learning to work with as a team with other people, right? Mm-hmm. It's learning to navigate the customer relationship. They may not be your customers, but it's almost on the job training for when you do have customers. It's seeing different situations, different, you know, different ways of doing things. It's invaluable. Mm-hmm. I honestly, if anyone that asks me, if they should go to work for someone when they want to be a trainer, 100%. I wished I would have done it sooner and stayed longer. Absolutely.
That just speaks to how much you're open to learning as well, though. You know, you're always striving to learn more, which I so appreciate about you.
Well, and I think you brought up a good point there, Tyler, about clientele. Can you tell us, you know, kind of how vibrant the working cow horse world is right now? And what does it mean for you to have clients?
We're busy. Like the industry, I believe, is busy. There's a lot, again, we spoke earlier about there's a lot of demand for bridle horses. People that want, like, lots of phone calls even this spring about, do you know where there's a bridle horse I can buy and go shows? Lots of phone calls about that. You know, there's, it seems to be in the last couple of years, at least I've noticed, there seems to be more aged event horses, which is a good thing. There's more, I always worry that there's going to be no guys coming up after my age group, but we're seeing more and more younger guys. Again, it's not, there's not tons and tons because it is a limited market, but I have seen some new faces. I'm grateful to have people that'll pay me to do what I like to do.
And have people that trust in your program.
Yeah,
right?
And people that, exactly, that trust us, you know, and as I go and we get, it's this evolution, we get better horses and clients that are longer term clients. I mean, we're really grateful for that. And we're, again, that goes with working to better ourselves as we want to do a better job to encourage, not necessarily better clients, but more long-term show horse type clients.
Yeah, and that's a great point because like you said earlier, horses are in training for a lot of years for you guys.
Yeah.
And so that long-term commitment for both the owner to have the horse with you, but also for you to be able to put the time frame in to be able to produce the bridle horse at the end. I think that's pretty neat.
Yes, absolutely. It's a huge commitment on everybody's part, right? Very big. And yeah. I mean, that's something I don't take lightly, is that's a lot of money invested in an animal and in, you know, in us. That can be a lot of pressure, right? So I'm thankful for every client I have. Like I said, people that are willing to trust me with an animal they love and pay me to do it. So
the point I want to make is just how good you are now at really being able to read both horse and rider and put the two together, but also communicate with that client to let them know what needs to happen to bring that horse along and to maintain that horse too. Because of course, you are going to need to have veterinary care. You are going to need to have some body work. You are going to need to have the proper farrier look at it. So I think that is a really huge element as well that you can't negate. I know you're very bashful about some of these things, but I'm going to toot your horn here for you and just say that I think that you do a great job at that.
Well, I think that's something that comes with doing it too. Like just being more comfortable knowing your own program and understanding it yourself. And then as you go, you're, again, a person becomes more confident in what you're doing and it becomes easier to communicate with your clientele. You don't want to lead people astray and you want to have clear communication, which I'm still working on every day. Feelings always come into play with this, right? Because there's an emotional attachment to these animals. So you want to be truthful, but you don't want to hurt people's feelings at the same time. And again, you don't want to waste their money either, ideally, yeah. Right?
Yeah, yeah. It is a bit of a tightrope for sure.
Yeah.
But I think the fun part about the Alberta Association, and I'm sure probably a little bit throughout the Working Cow Horse Associations in North America, really is the fact that it's an association that is looking at developing those clients as well. So it makes, you know, the job of the trainer may be a bit easier. you have lots of different avenues for people to get involved. So even myself as the, you know, chicken that I am to go down the fence, if I never want to go down the fence, I don't have to, right? I could stay in that rain box class that gives me a little bit of a taste of it without having to terrify myself.
Really, they've done a great job with that.
Can you just explain a little bit for some people? Because most listeners are not going to have a clue what a rain box class is. What are some of those stages that you have for classes?
I believe we have in just our Alberta club, the very entry level is a ranch hand class, they call it. It's a modified raining pattern. So it's a little less intimidating for new people. And then for the cow work portion of it, again, it's just like the name says, it's just boxing a cow. So they'll let a single cow out and you box it for a set period of time and just hold it on that back wall. You don't have to leave with it and go run it down the fence. So it's a really, really good way to get people in, get their feet wet. And again, like a lot of people move on from it, but there's a lot of people that stay in it or I believe go back to it even as they get, you know, on in years. So NRCHA and ARCHA, I mean, they've done a really good job with encouraging that. Because like you said, that number one, three events is intimidating, let alone three events and one of them being the fence work. It is intimidating. I mean, I'm an open guy and I'm still intimidated at the back gate on my young horses, so.
There's a little bit to work through, especially if you're brand new and you're wanting to learn the rules and which classes you're eligible for. But as you progress through it, it makes more sense.
Right. It does make sense. And I think the point too that I want to make sure people understand is that there's a spot for anybody that wants to come in, and that it is very much inclusive of people's tolerance to the speed and also where they're at in terms of horsepower. So you don't have to have that superstar bridle horse to be in the rain box class. You can start on, you know, the horse that you have and get it working with you as a trainer and start getting your feet wet. And then as you progress, and if you're really enjoying it, then you can start leveling up a little bit more. So there's lots of room in that, which I think is really cool.
Absolutely.
So if you can take us through a run, Tyler. So I know that it's a little bit different because it depends on the age of the horse in terms of whether or not the disciplines are broken up over specific days. Let's talk about a full-on bridle class. So if you are showing at, you know, one of the top shows with your bridle horse, what does that look like?
So generally it depends on the pattern. I'll start with the rein work, but say it's a trot in, you know, come in the pen, make sure they're kind of with me between my feet, try to gather them up. I'm going to look for center, trot to center. Once I'm there, I'm going to make them hit a little stop because we have to lope off, not from a trot. So depending which way, and you know, I'm going to pick that first lead up, lope in circles. And again, it depends on the pattern, how many circles. Say it's a large fast, so I'm going to try to sit up and chase that horse a little bit. And again, depending on how strong my horse is in the reining, if he's a strong in the reining, I'm going to try to expose him a bit and have a little speed on a loose rein to try to gain some points. So I'll hopefully be pushing on him a bit, come back to, or we get to center, I'm going to sit down for that small slow, try to really sit down and have him come back to me without pulling on him, ideally. Go to that small slow, cruise him through that small slow circle, come through center, set him up for a lead change. And again, depends on how strong he is in the reining. If I'm gonna try to make it so smooth and as pretty as I can without making it looking like I'm doing a ton. And then we go and do that all over again on the other side. We come back through center, change leads. And then I start thinking after that second lead change, I start thinking about right from there, my run and stop. But generally we're going to go all the way around the end of the arena. I'm going to try to come off the and wall square, nice square corner. So I can run to that stop straight all the way down the pen. But I'm thinking about it right after the lead change. So as I come around the corner, I'm looking up to where I want to go stop. And I try to build those horses every stride so they have a nice, really nice build. Because the judges are not just judging the stop, they're judging the approach to it. So I want the approach to be really pretty. Anyway, so I build to it, get hopefully a really nice, deep, smooth stop. I'm going to sit for a second. My turnarounds are going to come next. And it's generally a 3.5. So I'm going to sit for a sec, gather myself, make sure my horse is settled. And then I'm going to guide him to that turnaround. And the way I think about the turn when I'm showing is I try to get like a half a turn in before I try to put some heat on it. That way they stay, you know, if my horse is a little jittery, they found it, then I can put some heat on. So once I've got my 3.5, hopefully that last half was really fast and smooth. Again, I'm going to sit, think about my next run and stop, gather myself, set that lope up, sit back. I'm going to lope off and look for that next spot that I'm going to stop. Try to build them smooth every stride all the way to it. Hit that stop, whatever. You know, hopefully it's a nice, clean, hard stop again, smooth. And then I've got to think about that turn the other way. So I'm going to sit, gather myself, go find that turnaround, 3.5, hopefully finish really strong so it's fast and smooth. Then I'm going to gather myself for that next or that third run and stop. Set them up, lope off, build all the way to it. Try to get past my marker, hit a nice clean stop. Come to the end of it and then back up. Generally, they want you to back up 10 feet or to center. I try to overdo it just so I don't mess myself up and have a nice clean backup where they're light-footed looking and hopefully staying straight during the backup. So that's kind of what I see in the rein work. Then I'll just pause a minute because you can be zeroed if you don't pause in between the rein and the cow. So I'll pause, turn around, and I generally then smush my hat down because I don't want to be thinking about losing my hat when I'm trying to work a cow. So I'll smush my hat down and then I'll generally call for the cow. The guy will let a cow in it. I'll try to feel that cow because I mean, they're all a little different. Try to step to that cow easy, let that horse take a hold of it, see how the cow reacts. If it's a cow with a curl in its tail and moving, I'm just going to try to get it stopped and get some control and get it to kind of turn away from me and go back to the back fence. If it's a cow that's a little softer, I might be able to, you know, bump it, you know, knock it around a little more and have to bump on it and make it move across the pen. But basically, we're just trying to get control of that cow, move it and stop it till I feel like, number one, my horse has a hold of it and the cow has a hold of me. And then I start thinking about leaving the back fence. And all during the process of, again, getting control of this cow, I'm trying to get a little closer and a little closer just so I can leave that corner. And I think that's a really important thing showing because I've messed up a lot not doing it, but leaving that end wall in the very right spot. So not too far behind where you're playing catch up, and then not too high on them cattle where you might shut them off before center, or they don't give you a nice run. So again, all the whole time I'm boxing, I'm trying to set up a spot where I know I've got control and I can leave that end wall smooth all the way through the corner and in the right place so I can just run all the way down that pen in time in the right spot. So when the time comes, all I've got to do is ease, you know, push those horses past them a little bit, ideally. So once I get that first fence turn, to me, I always, in my own head, I always think after that first turn, I have to hustle because I sometimes think if I get a good first turn, I get a little lax and a little lazy and they'll be like, yeah, I got it. And then all of a sudden that cow's back to the end gate and it's beat me. So I really try to hustle up out of that first turn so I can go ahead and get control of that cow again. Depending on the cow, if it's softer cattle, you might have to get out of that turn and just ease up. If they're stronger cattle, I want to get up out of that turn in control again and go get it stopped the other way. And after my second turn, I'm going to read the plate and see if that cow's going to, you know, let me jump up in and go to circle in. And that, again, that depends on the cattle and the horse and the situation, how strong the cattle are, how strong your horse is. But a lot of the time I might try to go get a third turn so I can go to circling without a lot of separation. So I'm not playing catch up. So say you can have two really big turns to the judge, but then if I kind of lose it circling, I just lost all my points. So for me, I'll try to maybe go get a third turn so I can leave to that those circles in better control. And then from there, I'm just hustling myself. I'm in the circle and I try not to make it too complicated. I'm just going to try to hustle my butt around them cattle and get them kind of drove around in a circle, switch, go the other way. And hopefully the judge blows the whistle, because by then I'm usually out of air too.
That to me is the intimidating part, is that run down the fence and that circling up, because I don't think people are going to get a true appreciation. But when you're doing that run down the fence and the circling, you are literally right next to that cow. So the legs are so close of the cattle and the horse. And that's where the wrecks can happen, because of course you're added the speed on top of it all. So,
you know, and I mean, the tighter and faster it is, the better you score, right? So we're all striving to be, we want something that runs down the fence and challenges us. And, you know, we want to be right tight with them cattle, because the less separation you have between cow and horse, the more credit those judges give. And it really is, it took me, and I'm still not 100% used to it, but it darn sure, I know watching it when I was younger, and then I started doing it, it was a blur for a long time, definitely. Like, yeah. It things happen way faster than I thought they would.
Where your element of having, we were talking earlier about those horses with a really unique mindset. And you think about those bridle horses, we're asking them to go fast, we're asking them to go hard. And I think a lot of horses might not be that willing, but these amazing bridle horses, I think they want to put a fence run together more than we want to put a fence run together. So they'll put themselves there, which is an amazing feeling. But at the same time, you're like, it's going fast and we're close and there's legs everywhere. And you just hope it works out.
Yeah.
Well, and I think just listening to you go through it, for anybody that does any visualizations in their own sport, I mean, it just really tells us how many things are going on at the same time, right? Yeah. Which, you know, it then gives everybody, whether you ride English Western or just down the road to enjoy your horse, the recognition of how much is happening and how much you guys have put into all of the training aspects. Because like you say, Kaylee, you're going fast, then you're collecting, then you're turning, now you need speed, now you need control. So it's not only a very unique horse, but it you have to be in that mindset as well as the rider.
Absolutely. And I think for me, it just took doing it a lot and having a lot of bad runs, you know, just doing it. So I changed my mindset about it a little bit. When I started, I was trying to, when I showed, to make it pretty instead of just getting the job done. And once I quit trying so hard to make it pretty, and I just said, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And of course, building the muscle memory where you could think on your feet, you know, you could react to something without thinking about it. That's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And same with the horses, right? They've got to do it enough and be, you know, again, with that special minded horse where, again, I think a fence horse is born, not made. Like it takes a really special horse to be able to put, especially on tough cattle, be able to put that together and have them stay together, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I thought that was a fabulous chat. Thank you so much for joining us and taking us through all of that. If people are wanting to learn more about the cow horse industry, or if they're, you know, within Alberta and they are interested in getting a hold of you and talking to you more about, you know, potentially getting some lessons or having a horse train, how can they best approach you?
So we have a Facebook page and an Instagram page, or handle, I guess. So Facebook is Tyler Albright Performance Horses, and then Instagram is albright.cowhorses. So you can find us that way. I also believe the ARCHA website has a list of trainers on it. So if we're not really in your area, but you're in Alberta and you're interested, so that's just cowhorse.ca. Yeah.
Alberta is trainer rich. There's lots of good trainers here. I think in, you know, the cutting and the cow horse, there's lots of good guys. So.
Well, you're one of them. So I appreciate everything that you've put into this industry and the time I've spent working with you as well. So thanks again, you guys. And we'll be sure to link to all of those on our show notes so people can easily access them as well.
Awesome.
And we just want to thank you guys too for doing this, and especially Kim for what you do. I'm probably a pain in the butt still because your stuff is hard. But I think it makes a huge difference. Absolutely. Oh,
thank you. Appreciate that.
This is literally one sport I hope to one day get enough nerve up to try. I absolutely love the intricacy of training, conditioning, and knowledge that goes into creating a finished bridle horse. As you heard in our interview, this is a sport that has really opened its doors to involve all levels of riders and horse abilities. It's perhaps the ultimate cross of Western tradition and classical English dressage training, so the best of both worlds. The horses exert tremendous power and speed, all while under immense control. For this reason, as body workers, we can see a variety of body issues arise, which benefit greatly from our work. If you would like to find out more about Tyler's program, be sure to check out the social media sites at Tyler Albrecht Performance Horses on Facebook, or on Instagram under the handle albrecht.cowhorse. We'll have more contact information in the show notes as well. And if you want information specifically about the rein cow horse industry, you can check out the Alberta Rein Cow Horse website at cowhorse.ca, or the National Rein Cow Horse Association website at nrcha.com. Thank you for listening to this episode. We appreciate each rating and review you can give to help grow this podcast. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook under Equine Body Talks, or connect with us by email at equinebodytalks@gmail.com. To learn more about courses by InHand Equine Therapy, please follow them on Instagram and Facebook as well, and their online course platform at inhandequinetherapy.podia.com. Remember to always be an advocate for your horse and not be afraid to open the conversation around your horse's wellness team.